This is CliffCentral.com. Yeah, good morning, everybody. Monday. So you refreshed after the long weekend or exhausted?
Yes.
No.
Ben enjoyed it.
That's enthusiastic from your part, Ben.
Yeah, Ben bounced in here this morning. He said he had a great weekend. He and Daniela went away.
We went away to like, wow, it's just so incredible. I feel like 4 years younger.
Oh, jeez.
That good.
Wow.
Did you find the fountain of youth wherever you went?
Similar. Where was this big dam? We were like on pedal boats and canoe. There was Wildebeest running around.
Wildebeest?
Huh. Yeah, we went to Dalstrom. This place very completely nice. Off the grid. So solar power. So zero government. It just felt perfect. It felt like where I actually really want to live.
This going off the grid thing is like a family obsession of my whole family at the moment. They all are buying inverters and solar panels and batteries and God knows alone what else. I mean, it's going to cost everybody an absolute fortune, but hopefully by the end of it, you won't depend on Eskom at all, right?
But it's that feeling, Gareth, that you are just doing your own thing in life. Mm. It's amazing.
That you don't need government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then played a golf course that we wanted to play for years, and it was every bit and even better than I was hoping.
So why was this one so special?
Oh, it's just the location, Highland Gate. If you see pictures of it, I put some on Instagram, but I'm making a video about it. It's just you have to be there. You can't grasp how huge this place is, how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
It's just set amongst these sort of like hills, and it's like I get to play really great golf courses in this country, and I've played some amazing ones overseas as well. But this one, you stand there like in utter disbelief that this can actually be possible. It's just so beautiful, and the people were just so nice. There was a staffy in the clubhouse. Just like a really cool place. Like, it's actually kind of sad coming home. It was that perfect a trip.
Jeez, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And we hiked. I found a staff in the forest.
What?
A staff. Like, somebody's staff.
It's like a big stick.
Do you think this is a sign from Jesus?
Or Gandalf?
No,
someone walking around without a staff. No, they're really battling.
It was an old branch that I sort of made into a staff. It felt great.
Neither of our suggestions, which I thought were all.
No, cool. They were nice suggestions, but just off the mark. And I even saw a dead wildebeest.
Sure.
As in, like, you know, I don't think he was killed by a lion, but his remains were by this river.
A carcass.
He still had great hair. Oh. He was like smiling, good teeth. Horns were there, and then it's like his carcass was there.
Huh. I don't think it was smiling.
Maybe he had a stroke or something.
He looked like he was smiling.
Huh. And good teeth. That's very important.
Fantastic teeth.
Well, you know, you've got to start somewhere.
Having a stroke.
Yeah, and then we actually went into Dalstrom on the Friday, had an Airbnb experience. That was pretty cool.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was great. It was everything.
I've never used Airbnb.
But a lot of people haven't because there's so much that can go wrong. But this thing was everything this woman said it was. And then there was like six stray cats living there. Amazing.
You like that though, because you
because for
that.
Some people that's not very nice.
Yeah.
So Dalstrom is amazing. Had some trout.
Mm.
Of course, indulged in the trout while in Dalstrom. Hmm. And then as we were leaving, there was a thing called Lekkerland happening.
Lekkerland.
Which must have been a big scoop.
Now, I've actually never been to Dalstrom. I've been through there. But I hear from people there's,
that was
just Sia restarting after the weekend.
It's kind of halfway from Joburg to the Kruger Park if you go like that route.
And I know where it is, but I hear it's just totally otherworldly because it doesn't look like any other part of South Africa. It's almost a world on its own.
Mm. Yeah, so you can find these places, these trout farms and other places you can stay, and it's just rolling hills and the mist comes in.
Yeah, it is lovely. Been a few times.
It's the kind of place you want to go and drink a lot of red wine as well, and fires.
Sounds beautiful.
We had a fire.
It's like you're getting ready for winter.
Oh, it was just perfect.
All right, well, I did something so stupid. On Saturday, I was at the shops, and I smashed my little toe into the wheel of a trolley.
Were you wearing open shoes?
I was.
And it was
first of all, I went back to the car. It was bleeding so much after it.
There was blood?
So much blood. And I tried to wrap it up and fix it, and then I wanted to give up on the whole shopping trip, which was irritating me.
Well,
and
you just touched the trolley, so straight away you got tetanus.
Yeah,
so many germs.
I went home and sorted that out. Trust me, I got that out of the way really quickly when I got home. But what a stupid, dumb irritating thing to do because now I'm hobbling a little bit like a like an old man.
Did you scream out loud when it
happened? No, I just quietly went under my breath.
Did your eyes mist up a bit?
Yeah, they did. I went
But especially because your baby toe, you think it shouldn't be this sore, but it really is.
That baby toe, let me tell you.
It's got all your nerves in your body go to your baby toe.
Everything, right? And it's such an unnecessary, stupid little thing. But apparently if we didn't have it, we wouldn't be able to balance.
Yeah, we'd be falling over a lot more.
It's so little and terrible. And
I find that so weird.
It is weird. And it seems like an unnecessary piece of equipment, like we should have got rid of it at some point. It should have evolved away.
But then we'd have a new baby toe.
Well, we'd have something else. But a baby toe. And by the way, a lot of people have very strange-looking baby toes.
Yeah, well, they do look different to the rest of your toes.
They do. I mean, a lot of people's baby toes have very, very small fingernails on them, or toenails.
They might be triangular in shape.
Yeah, they could be all weird kinds of shape and things. And I don't even like looking at feet, but that's a thing that someone brought up over the weekend when I was talking to them about it. Oh, big toes and baby toes, very, very different. Everybody has a unique, you know, arrangement.
What thrilling conversation you got into.
That was the most important part of my weekend, but it was a nice weekend to just chill and do nothing and kind of lie around. I was so super lazy yesterday. I watched Monty Python's Life of Brian on Netflix. Now that was fun. That's a real old classic.
It really is.
And I thought about that movie because it was so ahead of its time.
Yeah.
When the Pythons brought out The Life of Brian, it was what, 1970 something? It couldn't have been the 80s, maybe in the early 80s, but either way, it was way ahead of its time. Mm. I mean, it had things in it that were unspeakably revolutionary, like just barely, I mean, like parodying and mocking and ridiculing religion for a start was so way ahead of its time. That was never done before then. When they came out with this movie, they had to go on TV and defend themselves against archbishops and all kinds of other things. Because no one had ever done this. They had the first ever full frontal nudity of a male and a female.
You saw Graham Chapman's bush and...
Right, and everything, and beef. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Sausage and beans.
Yep.
Frank and beans. I think that's the right way to put it.
Yes. And Graham himself was completely drunk through the entire filming of
this
movie.
Whole thing. Shame. He was the python who died first.
But he was drunk all the time.
He was always drunk. Completely, comprehensively drunk. But they all did it. I mean, Gilliam did the directing. Or was it Jones who directed in that one? Terry Jones. Well, it was just a beautiful, beautiful movie. And so clever. There's so many things about it that I've watched it, I don't know, a few times in my life. Because when I was younger, when I was a teenager, I thought it was the best thing ever. And I watched it a hundred times.
Endlessly good one-liners and interplays. And
so it felt nice to see it again. Yeah, it's just great. It's so clever. Anyway, thought I'd throw that in there. For anyone who wants to complete their education in the classics, that one's got to be in there.
Yeah.
And then I otherwise ate really just everything I wanted, like a fat pig.
It's good.
Mm. I see there's lots of stuff in the news that we've got to get into today, but we've also got a lineup of pretty interesting stuff happening. So if you want to free up some of your morning this morning so you can listen to all this stuff. First of all, Henry's going to pop in place of Anthea this morning. She's away. And we're going to be talking to someone who's written a really interesting article that I found the other day about how we as a nation have scored really poorly for life expectancy, alcohol use, depression, diabetes. Apparently in the Global Wellness Index, we are dead last. Oof. The guy who wrote about this, Elian Wiener, is going to talk to us about what he's discovered and what we should know about being as fucking unhealthy as we are. You know, we think... Well, South Africa, we've got a nice climate. People should be outdoors more. People shouldn't be eating stuff that's bad for them like I did this weekend. But apparently we're a nation of completely obese, lazy, useless, inactive, unhealthy people.
Yeah, I think we're quite a productive country in that we all work quite hard and don't look after ourselves as a result.
Maybe that's
part of it. We work long hours, we work hard, and then don't balance that out with exercise and choosing a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, look, whatever it is that we are not doing right, this guy will help us to figure it out because he's written an article on a site called wealthwoke.com. Now, anything with woke in it, usually I'm nervous about, but it's a very good article, and someone pointed it out to me, so I'm glad I read it. And then we've got Andrew Chester popping by. He is going to tell us all about data breaches and hacking. He's basically, he can hack anything. He could hack our computers here in the studio right now. He could hack your phone. He could hack your laptop. And he's going to show us just how dangerous that is. And he's the managing director of a business that he started, a cybersecurity company. So he's going to pop by and tell us a little bit about hacking, which is probably something we should know about.
Yeah, and it's actually happening. It's not just to people that you know anymore. It's happening to you.
Well,
it's happened to my business. Emails have been
It happened
hacked.
To you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
So it's not actually called hacking with what happened to us. It's called a Trojan horse. And it's a letter that comes in.
So it was Greeks then?
Yes.
Oh, those damn Greeks.
And as much as I love horses, just this one I don't.
Not good.
And they send you a letter threatening you, demanding Bitcoin within 48 hours.
Oh, I got those.
Otherwise, they'll send
you. I just ignored them.
I got one saying, I can't believe the porn that you watch.
Yes, which I knew was sending all your clients.
Yeah, I knew it was suspicious because I don't watch weird porn.
I just deleted mine. Was I meant to take it seriously? Oh, hell, someone's probably got all my details now.
And I've been doing a lot of research on Nigerian media.
Yes.
And some of these websites I've gone on to, especially the sort of underground influencers and, you know, opinion makers, because the newspapers are so untrustworthy.
Yeah.
Because they're all run by government. So I've had to delve deeper and go into the sort of underground. And some of these sites, you know, warn you of security stuff before you go in, and it recommends that you exit the site immediately. Jeez. I'm waiting for a whole lot of Nigerian weird stuff to come up on my computer.
I mean, that's quite dangerous. So you want to find out something, so you trust the Nigerian site. Like, Nigerian cookies are different than ordinary cookies.
Oh.
That's why I didn't accept their cookies. I didn't know what was in them.
Well, is this why you don't visit my Zimbabwe a lot anymore?
Yeah, for that reason too.
Right.
Did you just say Nigerian cookies are different to other cookies?
The site issues cookies. Nigerian cookies.
Yeah, no, it's quite
That reminds
scary.
Me of a song.
Oh, yes.
Nigerian pussy is not. Nigerian pussy is the softest. Niger pussy is the cream of the crop. Niger pussy make a nigga wanna pay.
God alone knows what I'm going to get in my Google searches after this, thanks to that song. But there we go. Princess Vitara with the famous song Nigerian Pussy, just in case you were wondering. Well, as I said, lots of stuff going on in the news too. I saw Barbara Streisand has put her head over the parapet walls about Michael Jackson, and she's getting huge flack. But we do, on a Monday, like to go over The Bachelor.
Well, seeing as we weren't here on Friday, drama from last week.
Okay, so let's talk about the Bachelor show on Thursday.
Well, there was the do or die session, Gareth. There was America and Kelly. Oh, they went on this romantic yacht trip on the Valdav.
The Val.
And one was going to get a rose, one was going to go home.
And yeah, it's just the most awkward when it's two on a date. It's just not right.
That's absolute rejection.
This new awkward dynamic was the two girls bickering with each other about lying and being honest and all this other kind of crap. And then Lee tells them both to off at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he
said, you didn't choose one.
He says, I don't trust either of you.
They're both off.
They cooked their goose.
Gone. Just like that.
Were they the only two to go from the episode?
No.
Oh, God, there were more.
There was more.
There was blood on the floor.
There was more, Gareth, yes.
Oh, no. You see, I missed this one, so I need to go home.
Yeah, how dare you? This was such a pivotal one.
Okay, carry on.
I missed it, sorry.
Oh.
Carry on.
Screw you guys. Okay, so then America and Kelly gone, which means I only have one person left now.
Who's your last standing?
I started off resting bitch face Edith is my last. She's my only hope.
And you were like the strong contender.
I know, I really thought I was in. So I got RBF Edith. And then Leanne's only got Michelle R left because Natasha, the scientist, also got voted off.
Yeah. As well, so...
So, it was finally
so Leanne and I are down to one person only in The Bachelor. Outrageous. So, Gareth, you are still there with your jizzes.
Yeah, I've got the greatest list. I knew this from the beginning.
Jenna Gina Jazan.
You knew this from
the beginning. Sia, you've still got Jacqueline, Michelle, DP, and Nontombi. Mm-hmm. And Leanne and I, we both got one strong person left, but just one.
Just the one.
Mm.
Just the one.
I think it'll carry us for a while, Ben, over a few weeks.
But there's only a few weeks left.
There was just so much drama.
Well, any improvement on Lee's ability to connect with these women? I mean, so far, well, it's been very cold.
Well, as I saw on Twitter, people are saying he's like a Wi-Fi connection. He's like a Wi-Fi hotspot because he's got a connection with everybody. He's kissing all these girls. And then, yeah, I don't know. He's obviously not convincing, but that's why he is the Bachelor.
Because this Bachelor stuff keeps coming up on my Instagram timeline as well, maybe because we talk about it and I'm following some of the stuff from the show.
Right.
And there was a video where Jason, the host, is busy telling me about different dog breeds. Did you get that as well?
Well, because one of the major sponsors of the show is a...
the pet people,
insurance people.
Okay.
That's why they did the dog agility training.
So Lee's around the dogs in the adverts.
Yeah.
But even more scandal, okay? So Bachelor Australia.
Yes.
Remember I told you about that? It was Honey Badger Cummins.
Yes, he's got very wild curly hair and it's just not attractive at all.
Well, he doesn't even pick a girl in the end. Spoiler.
What?
Yeah, he says,
goes home empty-handed.
Yeah.
It's like going to the shops and emerging with nothing.
He's like, I'm out of here.
Really? What? He decided against it. It hit me. Wait, what's this quote? It's out of respect. He said
oh God. When people talk like that, you know they're about to say something insulting.
I mean,
it's like anything before the word "but," they don't really mean.
It was disrespectful.
Yeah. So he says it hit me with a thunderbolt. If I can't stand here right now and say I'm picking her and I love her, why would I start something with someone? He said. Why would I go in and start something that has a high potential of breaking her heart 3 months down the track? So basically, he went through all these Sheilas for however long time
these
period
Sheilas.
And decided, even in the show, he's like, well, I'm going to pick one of these Sheilas later. And then he decides at the end, like, well, look, I don't actually love any of you Sheilas, so I'm just going to turf it. And, thanks for coming.
See, I'm starting to feel like we're getting played here now, because what happened with The Bachelor in the States, and I think they just finished their season like 2 weeks
ago.
It was the Virgin Bachelor. So already they were getting people to watch and they would do very corny things like have a whole shower scene where Colton is in the shower. Like, why do we need to have that? And they'd always drum up whether or not they take the fantasy suite, which is the Bachelor and one of the ladies.
Ooh.
And then went right up to the finale where there were two ladies left. And I think it's like a 2 hour special. And in the first hour of the special, Colton says, I don't actually think I want these ladies. And it's like, what are you saying?
What did you sign up for, dude? You got a TV show to do. Come on. You've got to be professional at the very least.
So he then actually, plot twist, says, yeah, you two I'm not interested in. I actually want to go back to one of the ladies I evicted like a few weeks ago. So he goes back to someone else and says, yeah, I made a mistake. I actually want you.
So what if it happens to good old show business? Okay, so Nick Cummins, he's a rugby player. So for a start, like I always say, don't date sports stars.
This is the Australian dude.
Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. But Sophie, who was one of the girls at the end, so apparently one of the girls he actually liked then was like, nah, I don't want your rose at the end. So then she was like, she got to like the final four or something and then just said, nah, I'm done. But this girl, Sophie, who's one of the final contestants, actually has a good point. She said, the fact that he couldn't see enough in one girl out of 28, it just shocks us. I'd hope he's a little bit embarrassed. Or gay. But this is the thing, guys. Yeah, like, it's okay to be gay nowadays. Maybe this is the underlying problem.
And maybe they're just choosing bachelors who are way too good looking to be straight.
This is the problem. I think a lot more guys are gay nowadays than people know. And now The Bachelor is exposing this. But it's just because everyone wants a certain kind of guy, but some guys are just not that nice.
Yeah.
Like normal heterosexual guys just aren't that well polished and put together.
You can't put them on TV. They always embarrass you.
They're embarrassing. So now they've got these semi.
Especially Australian guys.
So now they got potentially semi gay guys, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe they just also have the wrong casting directors.
Maybe they should just have a mixed sex bachelor and bachelorette.
How about it just a general roll the dice on all things bachelor?
Well, you fall in love with a person, not a woman or a man.
That's why you got to just have bisexual contestants and a bisexual bachelor.
Bisexual bachelor.
Yeah, that's the
bound to be action. Right. Double the chance.
The bisexual bachelor would probably be the best. There we go. Because you're guaranteed a result.
That's exactly why the gay bachelor didn't work out in the States, because people started hooking up with each other.
Gays. Always hooking up. It's amazing.
Oh, instead of with the Bachelor?
Well, yeah, if you weren't really getting a connection with a bachelor, you'd be like, it's fine, because there's still some other people in the room.
Yeah, so then it basically becomes Big Brother.
So I just want to go to one story in America quickly that we didn't really pay attention to last week, but it seems to be brewing, and it could be indicative of a lot of the things that are important in South Africa and generally if you have kids or if you yourself are at college. So there's this college admissions scandal that's been going on. Have you heard about this?
Yes. Oh,
so
yes.
Two famous actresses,
Lori Loughlin
and Felicity Huffman, mm-hmm. have both got daughters that they bribed their way to get into college. They basically lied about the fact that they were on the rowing team or something.
They paid hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, $500,000 that Lori Loughlin apparently paid to get her daughter in. Her daughter, by the way, is an Instagram influencer.
Yeah, she's a YouTuber.
Yeah, she's like a, you know, one of those dime a dozen celebrities online.
Mm.
And she very embarrassingly went on a video and said, basically, yeah, I don't care about college. So she's taken the place effectively of someone who could actually have benefited from college. But this shows you how stupid college is. And I have had for the longest time a lot of suspicion around universities, just how necessary they are, what these qualifications, unless it's something like medicine or engineering or the sciences, I think you're wasting your time. Law obviously is also an exception. Whenever you're learning a particular skill set that you need to be able to implement in order to get your career off the ground,
mm-hmm.
unless you need those things, studying anything else, especially in the humanities, is pretty much like you could read those books at home in your spare time, and you could learn about philosophy, for example. And there are courses that you could probably do online, and maybe it should be stuff that people do, but those shouldn't be university. I think we've got to change the way that we think about this, because essentially what people are interested in here is credentialism. They want to be able to say, I went to Harvard or Yale or Stanford. That's what these parents have tried to do to get their kids into these colleges, because then they reckon it'll give their kids a social network. It'll give them an ability to walk into a room and say, look at me, I got a really good education. Mm. I don't know that these people who are getting these degrees or these qualifications are actually worth it, because they seem to, once you're in, you get your degree, it doesn't matter anymore. And it doesn't seem that hard to get these degrees once you're in the college. The hardest part is getting in.
Yeah.
And after that, they don't exactly, you know, say, oh, well, I'm sorry, you weren't clever enough to get this degree in, I don't know, social justice or whatever. So we're going to let you just get out now. They always keep them in, and they always make sure everyone graduates. I mean, graduations are now so big that there's like tens of thousands of people at every graduation, and it's not a thing anymore. So I'm just starting to wonder about what real value, and you think of how much this costs, to forget about the bribes these actresses had to pay, to get your kid into an Ivy League college in America. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of student debt if they have to pay themselves, and if their parents are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars up front. And it basically cripples a lot of these people, because you start off owing more than it'll take you 10 years to pay that off.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem right to me. Start at a disadvantage just for the sake of having a piece of paper from a university.
Living like a student for 10 to 15 years, even though you're working a proper job.
It prolongs your adolescence rather than allowing you to get out into the world and work. I have a lot more respect for someone who finishes school and starts working immediately than I do for someone who goes off and does 8 years of academic qualifications to basically remain an adolescent, usually stay with their parents during that time too. It just prolongs the period before you can really call yourself an adult. And I think in this country, we've got such an obsession with tertiary education, and I don't know that it's any good. But here's this daughter of Lori Loughlin basically saying, oh, well, college doesn't matter. Parents could be going to jail for what she did here.
I'm literally moving into college today.
And soon it'll be moving out day. A source tells ET that Lori Loughlin's daughters Olivia and Bella are having a tough time dealing with the domino effect of the college admissions bribery scandal that their parents are allegedly involved in. Both Lori and her husband Massimo were among the 50 people charged in the scam. Now a source tells ET, quote, Bella and Olivia are suffering in their own ways from the fallout of their parents' decisions.
Oh, so much suffering. I mean, you're such privileged little shits that you've basically, she's already got like a career going on YouTube or whatever. So it's not like she's suffering. So all she's suffering with here is humiliation, because her parents did what a lot of elite parents might do, and they paid their way for their kids to get into college.
See,
poor them, suffering so much.
They're really going to make an example out of these cases, because at first I thought it was just money, but
no, they lied as
the
well.
The sliminess of it all. So what these parents would do, and particularly from what I've now read thus far in Felicity and Lauren's case, is that they would pay money, yes, but they'd go as far as, you know, you brought up the rowing situation. So one of the parents actually lied, saying that their daughter was in a rowing team, but would Photoshop countless photos of this random rowing team and just put her daughter's face in it.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's not just, oh, here you go. No, here's a brown envelope with some cash.
Active lying.
That's why I think they'll be made an example of. And they would go as far as, for some of the admission tests, they would lie and say that their daughters have learning challenges or disabilities, so that they would end up doing these tests in a room alone. And when they are in a room alone, they'd be able to, on a one-on-one basis, go to whoever's overseeing the process saying, hey, listen,
let her in, even though she's a moron.
Can try, like, and then they'd swindle more money to people like that. Or in some cases where they say they have learning disabilities, they have to do this test alone, they would then have that room and then they'd trade them out with a smart student.
I mean, it's just, it's like such, you talk about privilege. Here these
this
kids are
sliminess.
They're growing up the children of celebrities, which is always the most unequal possible situation to start off in, because it's just weird. Your parents are famous, so you don't really understand what it's like to be normal from the get-go. And then they're prepared to lie and to bribe and to pay to try and get you ahead, even though you're probably quite an average child. You're so goddamned ordinary, and they're trying to make you seem like you have something special going on. So what you end up with is looking, now that we've caught you out, you end up looking like someone who has advanced far beyond their merit. Someone who shouldn't be put in the position that you're in, because actually quite useless.
I mean, would you hire one of them now?
Oh, hell no.
You know?
Oh, hell no, no.
Quote, far more invested in college and would love to have completed USC.
I'm also literally never at school, that I think my class doesn't even, and maybe they forget I go there. I'm kidding.
Meanwhile,
see, that's the kind of attitude that I think would piss a lot of people off. You think of how many people in this country break their backs to put their own kids through education.
Yeah.
We know about domestic workers who are working three different jobs in a week because they're trying to get their son or daughter into university, trying to pay for those exorbitant university fees. And then you wonder if they get into university whether they're actually learning anything or not that's of practical use. Because a lot of what goes on in university seems to me to be more about indoctrination than is about education. And there are, you know, administrators and academics who are pushing an agenda rather than actually trying to educate young minds. Certainly not showing up with a diversity of thoughts. They're showing up with a primary objective of diversity within their class in terms of the physical appearance of the people there.
Yeah,
but this whole
thing
is just a mess.
I think, you know, what else a person gets out of varsity is they do pump up the workload, which prepares you for real life. Because the workload at school is nothing compared to...
But if you're her... You don't care if you don't do your homework. I've got to go to India to do an Insta shoot.
I'm interested to see how the court proceedings around this will be, because in some of the parents' cases, both parents have been named. In Felicity Huffman's case, she's the only one who's been named. Her husband isn't. So I don't know where that line is drawn, but also what they'll be charged for and to what extent. Because in Felicity's case, she had already had her time in court. She had to appear in court already.
Oy,
and
embarrassing.
This, talking about embarrassing. No. She had up until midday on a particular day to turn herself into authorities. But clearly, once again, because I think the police are trying to really go as far as possible in making an example of these parents. The police rocked up at Felicity Huffman's house at like 6 a.m. on this day, squad deep, like 4 or 5 police cars, sirens blazing, and police storm out with guns and they knock on a door like, yo, you have to come with us.
Kind of dramatic.
So the first footage we've seen of Felicity going into court is her in pajamas.
Oh, God. Embarrassing.
Okay,
well, so it's funny, but it's sad and embarrassing.
Well, let's all remember that if anything comes of this, it is that ultimately karma is a bitch. And if you're going to lie and cheat to get your very average children ahead, sometimes you're going to be caught out. And for a lot of people, I think that's just desserts. All right. Five things you need to know. You ready?
Yes.
First thing. Mm. And Ben knows about this story because I think we were talking about it over the weekend on WhatsApp. A Botswana man died after crashing an aircraft in an alleged attempt to kill his wife. This is just so disturbing. So this guy flew a King Air twin-engine aircraft into a venue where his wife was hosting a baby shower. And he was trying to kill her because they'd had an argument. And he obviously was feeling sorry for himself. The guy had a license and he flew past. He kind of dive bombed the place twice on his way through and then decided he was going to smash into it. Luckily, someone was onto what he was doing and what he was planning to do, and they managed to clear everybody out of the venue.
Well, he phoned a friend of his to find out if the woman was still at the venue.
Yeah.
And the friend thankfully thought, like, this guy is not right in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told everyone just to run, just to get out of there.
But just the most horrible footage that's emerged from this too.
Oh,
people
footage.
Could see what was
literally
going on.
Literally explosions and cars being blown up. And
just fire. And
you couldn't go near the cars because they were right near flames.
Terrible. So he was the only one killed.
Yep. His name is Charles Fulion.
You know, I've often said if you're going to do things like this, just involve yourself. You don't need to involve other people. If you're unhappy and you want to commit suicide, don't destroy a whole lot of other equipment and expensive stuff. There are ways to kill yourself that you can take yourself out of the equation with minimum fuss.
Well, this person isn't thinking along those lines, though.
No, they're not thinking at all.
His intent was to kill the wife, you know, so he's already just not okay.
And do you really need a whole aeroplane?
Well, he's a pilot.
To kill
if
someone?
He was like a lumberjack would use an axe, this guy wanted to use a plane.
Well, I wonder if this happened in New Zealand, like that horrible terrorist who shot up the two mosques. I wonder if New Zealand would ban small planes because they've banned guns. You know, this is always a good argument. Like whatever tool gets used must be banned.
Yeah.
Someone who wants to kill or wants to kill themselves will find a way to do it with a plastic teaspoon.
Until we're stuffing cotton wool into people's throats.
Please, can we just stop this nonsense? The problem here is not guns, and the problem here is not planes. The problem is people who have serious mental conditions. And untreated, these people end up becoming a danger to themselves and society at large. We've got to stop looking for the symptoms and go after the cure.
Pick out the brainwashed.
Jesus. Anyway, other stories. A newly formed political party called the Alliance for Transformation for All, ATA, says it hopes to change the transport system in South Africa. That's all they're interested in, is the transport associations. Okay. Some of the key issues include government subsidies for taxi commuters and improving road infrastructure in rural areas and townships. They say they want permanent taxi permits instead of renewable ones. So this is clearly like a party that's being funded by the taxi bosses. But good for them. The more the merrier. Let's get these parties in there. I mean, for someone whose biggest issue in the world is transport, and there are a lot of people in South Africa who would be like that.
Huge.
I mean, if you're paying 60% of all the money you earn just to get from A to B, then you would probably take this party seriously.
Hmm.
Maybe they're the ones for you. And I don't know, another thing that was sent around on social media over the weekend, hideous video of like bodies washing up on the beach in Mozambique. Just bodies that have obviously washed down the river from the cyclone.
Oof,
and these bloated bodies are being washed up on shore. They say about 750 people already dead in three South African countries hit 10 days ago by Cyclone Idai.
Oh, man.
And it's not only that now. It's now this, these bodies in the stagnant water and the cholera and the malaria. And it's just really much bigger. Well, the BLF, which is a political party, I think in New Zealand, in Zimbabwe.
Did they comment
on... No, they're here. They're in South Africa. That's Andile Mtlitama.
That's right. They've blamed the cyclone on white people of the West.
Okay.
See, this is where we can't report this kind of crap, though, because these people don't need the attention. They are completely mentally unstable. That's all they are.
Well, anyway, apparently it's because of...
So what did the whites do?
Yeah.
Well, what we've done.
Yeah, what did you guys do?
Yeah, tell us, when was this meeting and how come I wasn't there? I need to know what I'm responsible for.
Why do we
for.
Ever get invited?
It's all about our greenhouse gas emissions. And we should be paying for this catastrophe because it's been caused by gluttonous cultures and civilization of death. Huh. And that this is actually a mass murder.
Yeah, don't lie, Andile. It's because you can't afford to pay for anything that you want someone else to pay for it for you.
And also that we are profiting from these disasters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm just waiting for my check from the Cyclone Idai people. So.
Like when people are sprouting that kind of shit off, they should be admitted to an institution.
Yeah.
Like this isn't a joke anymore. Yeah.
Put him in a straitjacket.
If this guy thinks this, there's something fundamentally not right in his head. There's a chemical imbalance.
But I kind of agree with you. We shouldn't even pay much attention to it. The NSFAS scheme, that's the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, has welcomed the Department of Higher Education's additional 967 million rand in funding to settle the historic debt owed to universities by over 52,000 students. So who ends up paying? The taxpayer. I don't have children. I didn't make a child that has to go to university, but now suddenly I find myself in a position to have to pay for yours. I don't know how this is right. I don't know how it's sustainable. And I also want to refer you to the first part of this morning's first hour, where we talk a little bit about universities and just how completely out of control this whole thing's become. If you have a BA degree, that does not mean you're going to get a job. And for your parents to break their backs to put you into a tertiary education institution to get a BA degree is a bit of a waste of the whole family's time. And it's allowing you to go to a university and extend your adolescence way beyond when you need to have it extended. And it's pointless. Stop it. The allocation of funds was specifically for students who were funded under the previous NSFAS program before significantly improved funding started last year. Okay. So we're paying for historic debt now too, not even new debt.
There's still a lot of jobs that need a degree in order for you to get in.
Which is
and
silly.
It's purely because it's they know that you've been almost institutionalized into working hard and to delivering things on time, working to deadlines. So, yeah, it's still a need.
All right. Well, let's see who can turn that need into something actually quite useful practically. Prince Charles and his wife have been the first royals to ever visit Cuba.
Ooh.
Cuba.
Yeah.
Was there a show jumping event there?
Okay.
They landed in Havana on Sunday for the first official trip by the British royal family to communist-run Cuba, even as Britain's top ally, the U.S., seeks to isolate the island nation. The heir to the British throne laid a wreath of flowers at the memorial to independence hero José Martí, and during his three-day historic visit, the 70-year-old Prince of Wales is set to dine with Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel, tour Havana's restored colonial district, visit community and green energy projects, and review a parade of antique British cars.
I guess they won't be doing the cigar smoking at the environmental
I don't think
one
so. No,
of their visits, that leg.
Probably.
Well, especially not with Charles, no, because Charles is green.
Yeah, he's big on that stuff.
Very interesting.
All right, so there we go. Happy, happy Charles. 70 years old, hey? Still waiting for mummy to clear the way so he can have his job.
Don't know if it's going to happen.
70 years, a long time to wait for a job. Talk about extending your adolescence. All right, let's get into the sport with Ben.
Yes, Gareth, let's do that. Because Bafana Bafana have qualified for something.
Mm.
The Proteas were way too good for Sri Lanka. And the Sunwolves, well, they can piss off, quite frankly. They needed a draw. But they got a win. How about that? Bafana Bafana. Percy Tau with 2 goals, 2-1. And even though the Libya home fans...
This is to get into the AFCON, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Acted like absolute barbarians in Tunisia yesterday. And the ref was very much on their side. Bafana, they showed character. They showed heart. They showed fight.
Oh.
They showed that they can qualify for a tournament without hosting it.
Mm-hmm.
How brilliant. So they will go to Egypt. June 21st to July 19th. That is when the AFCON will be taking place. And the draw for that will be taking place on the 12th of April. Very exciting times. Not a lot of football this weekend, actually, because they were, what do you call it, those Euro 2020 qualifiers. So, exciting time for African football because all the teams were decided for the actual competition.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, if you are into watching European qualifiers, over the weekend, Germany beat the Netherlands. But tonight, you can see the might of Montenegro taking on England. Turkey will take on Moldova. Kosovo versus Bulgaria, the one we've all been waiting for. Luxembourg, Ukraine, Portugal, Serbia, Andorra, Albania, France versus Iceland.
Sure.
Wow. I am salivating at the thought of all of those, and I'm sure you are too. Into rugby. Well, Super Rugby played over the weekend, and unfortunately for the Crusaders, obviously still a little bit down after the terror attack. Well, they lost to the Waratahs. They went to Sydney. They lost 20-12. Earlier in the weekend, the Blues beat the Highlanders 33-26. The Hurricanes faced a plucky Stormers team who were doing very well, and then they fell away at the end. So Hurricanes winning that one 34-28. The Sunwolves. We'll get to them in a second, but they did lose against them.
You've thrown forward to how much they can tie themselves in knots.
They lost to the Lions 37-24. The Bulls, oh, how absolutely embarrassing. The Chiefs have been the worst New Zealand team this year so far, but they went to Loftus-Versfeld and they won 56-20. The Bulls just weren't even in it. They had no fight, they had no heart, nothing that Bafana showed. The Sharks, they beat the Rebels in a very boring match, 28-14, just far too good for the Aussies. And then yesterday, the Reds, they beat the Brumbies, 36-14. Now, why I say the Sunwolves could piss off is because this whole thing about Sanzar expanding rugby, making it global, all these other great words that none of us fans ever, ever wanted. Never once. Not even the drunkest of moments did people say, oh, I wish the Super 12 could become the Super 14. Oh, I wish the Super 14 just become Super Rugby and we just add infinity teams every year. It was never said. But those pricks who live in Australia from Sanzar, they added an A to Sanzar because they had to try a bottle in Argentina. Anyway, the Sunwolves don't really seem to care. Like, the Japanese rugby authorities and administrators, they're not even funding the Sunwolves. You watch the Sunwolves team, it looks like a bunch of New Zealanders like moved to Japan in order to try like execute an Ocean's 11 heist or something and are masquerading as rugby players. It's not a Japanese team. So it's a bit of a joke. And for the Rugby World Cup bid, the Japanese Federation, I think they call themselves, or the whatever, they chose France in the World Cup and not South Africa. How about screw you, Sunwolves? You had a chance to kind of show that, you know, you've got...
Time to cut them loose.
You've got a bond with your Southern Hemisphere brothers, and you chose France in that World Cup. So you can also just get stuffed. And Sanzar basically said, we're not fitting the bill. We're not paying for the Sunwolves to basically play, and they're the wooden spooners. And I'm all for it. I really am.
Right.
Because also, like, they've got to play in Singapore to make it easier for people to travel to them. But there's no atmosphere in Singapore whatsoever. Surprise, surprise, not a big rugby culture. And then when they do play in Japan, it's cool for them, but then it's such a ball ache to get to Japan to play a rugby match. That's not going to work. But again, it's World Cup year, 2019, Rugby World Cup in Japan. You would think that they would be pushing all resources behind the Sunwolves becoming something, but they thought, nah, screw it. We're just going to rather make very reliable cars, electronics, and do other things and not have children. No Sunwolves. No Sunwolves whatsoever.
All right.
Like we said last week, that old Granny Queefing game show has always attracted more watches than Super Rugby. And that's the stats, people. Those are the stats. On to cricket. Yes, the Proteas were way too good for Sri Lanka yesterday and have been actually with the white ball throughout. Now, when they first got to the country, Sri Lanka, as a friend of mine tweeted yesterday on Twitter, Sri Lanka have been through the most. They've seen all kinds of load shedding. They've seen the Bulls go through highs and lows. They've seen Ed Sheeran. Like, so much has happened. They've been in the country for so long. And they arrived here looking like they would be competitive in white ball, but shite in red ball. But then they absolutely hammered the Proteas in the test series, and they've been pretty useless in the white ball stuff. So yesterday, in a bit of an experiment, Dwayne Pretorius was put up the order, and he scored 77 of 42 balls. Therefore, he will no doubt be the number 7, I think, going into the World Cup in May and June. And all the Proteas were just too good. They scored 198. Sri Lanka started well with Dick Weller, and then they just sort of fell to pieces after that. 137 all out. So they won that one 3-0. Reader Hendricks also playing bloody well. He was the player of the series for that T20 stuff. So that's it. That is your summer of cricket here in South Africa.
And Ben, you mentioned Ed Sheeran. He was wearing a Proteas shirt.
Of course
at the
he
game,
was.
Wasn't he?
Yep, he was. He was getting those easy points. He also wore a Bok jersey when he played on Saturday. When he was performing on Saturday. That old chestnut.
That's supposed to get everybody all fired up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's such a great country. People come out here. Such a great country. No, we're led by morons. We don't have power, so shut your mouth. Just take your appearance fee, play the songs everybody wants
and get out of here.
And point to some unattractive girl and say she's special. That's all you need to do as a rock star. Don't give us the "we love your country" malarkey. Ed Sheeran. That's pretty much it for your sport. Not a whole bunch on the go. See, this is the problem when you have these World Cup qualifiers or European qualifiers, African qualifiers. You take away league football, and that's the biggest thing people care about.
Yeah.
Other stuff, yeah, not so big.
Well, don't worry. We've got the money shot now with Henry Biddlecombe. So, Henry, first of all, nice to have you here. It's been a little while.
It has been.
They've deputized Selejo a couple of times. They don't. You're not the favorite reserve anymore.
Yeah, well, when they really have to scrape the barrel, that's when they send me. So, sorry, guys. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes these things happen.
You know what? There's lots to talk about, though. So, let's get straight into it. First of all, 10-cent results.
Yes. What's so, I'm sure you guys find yourselves spending a disproportionate amount of time talking about 10 Cent and Naspers, don't you?
Well, we have recently because they've gone and listed a separate part of the company.
As, the music business, yeah.
Yes. So tell me how that's worked out for them. How's that going?
Yeah, well, I think these results didn't really relate to the music business. It was more the core business.
Okay, which is games. It's all that
exactly.
All Chinese business. It's WeChat. It's all of that stuff.
That's right. And the reason why we worry about Tencent is because it's a 6 trillion rand business.
And Naspers owns the biggest stake in it.
They own a third of it. Exactly.
Therefore, it has an impact on our JSE.
Correct. Well, it accounts for around a quarter of our market. So it's a very important stock for South African investors.
6 trillion.
It's a very big number, isn't it?
Yeah.
And exactly to your point, so gaming comprises a very big proportion of the business. It accounts for about one third of their revenue, but they've had some challenges lately in China, and that's because China is obviously a highly regulated market. Mm-hmm. And they've stood up and they've taken notice of the fact that Chinese children are spending far too much time playing games.
Uh-oh. This is bad news for all the gamers.
Bad news for all the gamers in China.
And some regulation.
Exactly. So in China, you can't actually introduce a new game to the market without having it approved first. And in the early part of last year, the regulator just simply stopped approving new games. And sometimes things like this happen in China.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, that weighed
bureaucratic logjam.
Exactly. And typically, this organization approves anything in the region of 10,000 games a year. So it was a big deal for a company like Tencent, and it obviously weighed on their share price and on Naspers' share price. Long story short, for the fourth quarter, which is the period for which they just reported results, the gaming revenue growth was flat. So although group revenue grew at around 28%, that would have been a much stronger number if the regulator just approved these damn games. So that weighed on revenue growth.
Sure.
And then, of course, this is also a business that likes to invest in future growth. So costs sometimes grow ahead of revenue, and you've got what you call margin compression, and that weighed on profits. So you would have seen when the results came out, the headlines read very badly, and it said, oh my gosh, Tencent profits have gone backwards by 30% year on year, and there was a little bit of panic in the market, and that's why you saw the stock come down by about 5%, and Naspers came off in sympathy in the early hours of trade.
Right.
Why we aren't worried is that, as I've said, I think they're investing in future growth. And as you know, when you started this radio station, the costs sometimes come before the revenue, and you have to accept that. So as long as you think that the revenue will come, you can forgive the company for investing in forward growth.
So are they selling at a bit of a discount at the moment?
Yeah, they are. The interesting thing about Naspers is you're actually buying a share in Tencent at a 25% discount
already,
its spot price. But that's been the case for a number of years, and it'll probably sustain for a while as well. But as an investor, you kind of acknowledge that one day something will happen and that discount will compress. So you've got that as a nice underpin. But ultimately, Gareth, what will drive the Naspers share price is the Tencent share price. So it's a story that we still like. We still think that they're massive and very powerful secular tailwinds blowing behind Tencent. We still like China as an economy. So it's a share that I'm still positive about. And, you know, investors need to be a little bit careful when they trade on shorter-term news and sensationalist headlines.
And also in South Africa on RJ, so you don't have a lot of options right now. So if you can expose yourself to the Chinese market rather than our local one, which is beleaguered by a lack of electricity, tiny growth, not particularly exciting things ahead of the elections.
Yeah.
This gives you exposure to things that might grow instead of just recede.
Yeah, when you imagine being a South African investor, you kind of picture that lone soldier running through the war, you know, and dodging mines and missiles and bombs. It's kind of how we feel, actually, as fund managers at the moment.
Let's talk about the banking industry while we're talking about war, because that's turned into a bit of a battlefield. So there are a lot of these new digital players that have entered the market. There's Time, there's Bank Zero, Discovery. How's the how's the terrain looking at the moment?
Well, it's an interesting place to be, isn't it? Because really the market's been dominated by the major banks over a number of years. And now all of a sudden with the rapid introduction and uptake of technology.
Well, let's just, so there were the four big ones. Yeah. There's Absa, there's Nedbank, there's Standard, and there was, First National.
That's right.
And then, Capitec came in and everybody went, what? That happened while we were looking away? Because they suddenly grew a huge base of unbanked people and, exactly with their low fees managed to bring a whole lot more people into the banked market. Now we've got all these other guys. And are they paying attention to this? Because the big four have been like sleeping giants for a long time.
Well, they're paying attention. But they're very big ships and big ships take a long time to turn around, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally a bank has what? It has hundreds if not thousands of branches. And these branches cost a lot of money to run.
And people are going, why do we need them?
Exactly. Well, you needed them historically, didn't you?
Yeah.
Firstly, because you needed somewhere to go. And secondly, because you needed a way to handle cash.
Mm-hmm.
But that's becoming less and less of a problem.
Yeah.
You know, with the introduction of smartphones, you can now do everything at home on your phone. So actually, as a new entrant, you almost enjoy a little bit of an unfair advantage because you don't have that legacy cost base. And that's exactly what makes the current major four banks vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one in particular that I'm quite interested by, and it's called Time Bank, and it's owned by Patrice Motsepe's private equity investment firm, and you can actually invest in that firm through African Rainbow Capital Investments on the JSE.
Yeah.
And long story short, it's been going for around 7 years, and it only has – well, if you were to guess, how many employees do you think a new national full-service bank, so in other words, a bank where you can put deposits, you can draw cash, and you can borrow money from, how many employees do you think they need?
Well, in the old days, I would have said you'd need thousands, but now you probably need a couple of hundred.
120 people.
Oh,
wow.
Got 120 full-time employees.
So their costs are low.
That's a game changer.
Right.
They run it out of Rosebank. They don't have a
How
physical
branch
network.
How many clients do they have?
So they've currently got around 130,000.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but they're taking in around 3,500 new clients a day.
That's phenomenal.
So that number is changing all the time.
Okay.
And what they've done is quite clever. They've partnered with Pick and Pay. So each Pick and Pay shop basically doubles up as a Time Bank branch. And it's a full service branch.
Clever.
And you can go there and you can sign up for a new bank account. And I watched it with my own eyes because I didn't believe the number in 3.5 minutes with no documentation and no human involvement.
That's phenomenal.
It's a little kiosk. You go and you enter your name and your details. The FICA process is simply your fingerprint. You don't need proof of address or your ID. Scan your fingerprint and it issues with you with a debit card there and then.
That's superb.
And why is banking not like that already?
No, it should be.
It should be that way.
So who do you think is going to be the biggest loser in all of this? Because when you talk about Time being so innovative and doing things differently, how does that
question.
Help the others?
So what I mean, UBS have actually conducted some research in that space, and they compared what a Time bank account would cost you relative to, say, a Capitec or a Standard Bank. And given that Capitec is the cheapest in the market, that would be a good basis for comparison.
Sure.
Time's coming in at around 45 to 50% less expensive. Than a Capitec account.
Oh my God. It's going to chop them off at the knees.
I think so. So we did some maths. And it looks like you'll save 500 to 600 rand a year in bank fees. And that's just on the transactional side. You know, and for 3.5 minutes of effort, when I'm at Pick and Pay next, I might just think about.
Just open one for fun.
Opening an account just for fun. And maybe I might save some money in the process.
Mm.
The interesting thing though is how do we benefit from this as investors? And that's what your listeners will want to know. So you can buy an African Rainbow Capital share today at around a 50% discount to what their portfolio investment companies are worth.
Yeah.
But in that portfolio, they're only carrying their investment in Time Bank, at around 750 million rand, which equates to around 3% of the group's net asset value. So what I'm saying to you is you can actually invest in Time Bank for free at this
point. That's phenomenal.
And in 5 years time, it sounds outlandish. But this could very reasonably be the next Capitec. So I really like that share in case you hadn't got that from me yet.
I think we can pick up some enthusiasm from you.
Yeah.
I'm just picking it up. Quickly, last thing, the current power situation and Eskom being the disaster it is and load shedding, how's this affecting your investment outlook and your planning?
Well, you know, if you were to describe the environment that South African companies have been trading in over the last few years. You've basically had a situation where your revenue isn't growing and your costs are going up at inflation. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? It means your profit margins are getting squeezed all the time. And share prices trade relative to profits, don't they?
Yeah.
And at this point, we still don't think that South African shares are all that cheap. And we still think that profits can come under pressure because, of course, there are first order and second order effects with blackouts. First order effects being that factories can't run, businesses can't trade.
No.
Second order effects being that the owners of those businesses and their employees aren't earning money In fact, in a lot of cases, in real terms, when adjusted for inflation, they're earning less money. So they can't go and spend it at the retailers. They aren't asking the banks for more loans. So it's really this negative feedback loop. And we worried. We worried about the South African economy at this point. So we're reducing exposure to it, despite the fact that directionally, it looks like the guys at the top are taking us in the right direction. But we think it can get a little bit worse before it gets better still. So we're actually looking to increase our offshore exposure at this point, and also our exposure to companies which generate offshore profits.
Thank you, Henry. Always good to talk to you.
Pleasure.
There's a nice succinct summary for the Money Shot for today, and we'll see you again soon.
See you soon.
Thank you very much. Over to Sia. It's time for Said by Sia. This is our dose of optimism in the morning. Some useful info from Henry. Cheers. Thank you.
Some optimism and some fascinating news. I'm always just in awe of what the medical world gets to do. And this time, they've been able to take a step closer in being able to diagnose and easily spot Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. You know how hectic that is in terms of just testing it out and finding out if you could possibly have Alzheimer's. Sometimes it's a risky operation on your spine. Sometimes it's this expensive brain scan. Well, now thanks to the team working at Duke Eye Center in North Carolina in the United States, they've started to see the links between the retina and the blood vessels in your eyeballs.
Yeah.
And how that's slightly different between a person who could have Alzheimer's and someone who doesn't.
So in other words, this could be a new diagnostic tool.
Yes. So this means through a simple eye test, scientists could be able to tell whether you have Alzheimer's or not. So this is quite really, really interesting. So currently, we know that diagnosing Alzheimer's is very tricky, but these scientists working in the US have wondered if changes might be visible in the retina, which, if you think about it, the retina is just an extension of the brain and so could offer a window into what is happening behind the skull. So the retina's job is to convert light into neural signals, which it sends to the brain to be processed into, you know, the images that we see. So through looking at the retina and examining that, they've seen that the retina was thinner in people with Alzheimer's, and they had also lost more small blood vessels at the back of the eye compared to healthy people and those with, you know, mild cognitive impairment, which is a forerunner to dementia. So this team is really, really working together in making this happen. And so far, they say that the new test uses non-invasive imaging called OCTA, optical coherence tomography angiography. What a mouthful and a half there. But look,
I know you know what that means.
Absolutely.
I'm just going for lunch, but I need to first do my
OCTA.
Yeah.
That one. But they use the word simple, but it's far from a simple process. It's simple as compared to what is currently needed to diagnose Alzheimer's. But they're still hard at work. They still have tons and tons of hours to put into something like this. But I think we just have to take a moment of absolute awe to say kudos to the medical team who's making advances in this way. Mm. I think it's impressive.
That's brilliant.
That's it, Sebastian, for this morning.
Thank you very much. There we go. There's a look at everything that you need to know in the first half an hour of this morning, first hour. And we are going to hit some other stuff that's going on in the news. We've got two interesting guests popping by. And by the end of this morning, you'll know everything.
Guaranteed.
Everything, yeah. Just pretty much the whole goddamn lot. Exciting.
This is CliffCentral.com.